Good morning. It is time to get up with Oh What a Night, a heavyweight title bout that lived up to the billing, and we are all over it all morning long. We've also got the comeback. Does Joel's return set up the worst nightmare scenario for one NBA coach? The answer is yes. And then Swaggoo is back, which means we catch up on everything that has happened, and in the case of his Cowboys, everything that hasn't since we saw him last. Let's do this, people. It's time to get up. Come on, make some noise. What a night. What an unbelievable night that was last night of basketball. We've got it covered in a million different directions. We've got some football today as well. Graz is here. Legler breaking it all down. We'll get to Embiid. We'll get to all of that. We've got the college basketball covered. Show me who's on this morning. Oh, Swaggoo is back, and Tim Hasebeck is here. Andrea Carter is up. And Rebecca Lobo, fresh off doing the game last night, is ready to roll. Let's do this. Andrea, let's go through what was a spectacular matchup. Lived up in every way. It's Caitlin Clark. It's Angel Reese. It's a rematch of last year's national championship. Andrea, right off the bat, Caitlin came out firing.
You're 100% right, Greeny. Caitlin Clark came out in attack mode. LSU was going under the screens from the start, and Caitlin said, oh, you must have forgotten who I am. But Angel Reese tried to put LSU on her back with her playmaking and her skill in that first half.
She was the best player on the floor in the first half, Angel Reese was. But then this happened, a critical moment. Angel Reese, who was already nursing an ankle, goes down here, and this was a problem, Drea.
Yeah, and this was tough, and Angel Reese didn't look quite the same after this moment. I know she came back, she's a fighter, she's a resilient, but she didn't look quite the same for the rest of the game after this screening.
Right, would not make excuses afterwards, but clearly she was impaired by that. And then Caitlin Clark, spectacular there in the final moments of a spectacular first half. We were tied at 45 at the break. Angel Reese had 13, Caitlin Clark had 19. And then in the third quarter, Drea, it was all Caitlin Clark.
All right, what I say about the start of the game, Caitlin Clark came out in attack mode. At halftime, she came out in takeover mode. She was 110,000% in her bag in that third quarter. Knocked down four threes, got to that left hand multiple times from deep range, bottom of the net, every single time. When you talk about a player being in the zone, that was Caitlin. Watch the retreat dribble. Again, just getting to her spot, creating space for that beautiful three-point shot. We saw everything from Caitlin, but that third quarter was magnificent.
12 points for Caitlin Clark in the third. Then it's defense, and we're going the other way. It's Clark with a great pass. Iowa, an 11-point lead after three. To the fourth quarter we go, just over 5 minutes left. Iowa is looking to put it away after the fancy play there. Caitlin Clark would score 41 on this night, and Haley Van Lith just had no answers all night long. Drea.
Yeah, listen, at one point, you just have to put your hands up. Watch Haley Van Lith right here. Hands up, shrug. I can't help you. I gave you the best I could. That's all you're going to get from me. Do you know who I'm guarding? Caitlin Clark was phenomenal. This play was beautiful. Just engage Angel Reese enough and drop the ball off for Hannah Stuckey to go get it and lay it in. I'm telling you, it was a masterclass. Truly, it was a special performance.
41 points, 12 assists. Iowa back in the Final Four. The moment there with Kim Mulkey. The moments continue for Caitlin Clark cutting down the nets and headed to Cleveland for the Final Four. Let's hear from the players after the game.
It's amazing to be back in the Final Four. It's so hard to get there, especially with this region and how loaded this region was. But, you know, we told ourselves we're the one seed for a reason. You know, we've earned this. We deserve to be in these moments. We're prepared for these moments. We want to win two more, and, you know, I think we have the power to do that.
She's just a generational player, and she just makes everybody around her better. What did I say to her? I said, I sure am glad you leaving. I said, girl, you something else. Never seen anything like it.
All right, so I blew out everything else this morning here for the beginning of the show, and let's dive into it. Legler is here, watched all of it last night. Drea was terrific on the coverage, and Rebecca, of course, you were courtside calling the action last night with Ryan Rucco, and it was terrific. And I just want to start with the atmosphere. As one who has covered sports for 35 years, the observation I made at the beginning, the anticipation felt more like a heavyweight title fight than it felt like a basketball game, and then it came out and lived up. Can you describe what it was like in the building last night?
It felt like a national championship type of atmosphere. The building was completely sold out. The two teams have incredible fan bases. Even before the game started, the energy was at level 10. You had just cheers going back and forth between LSU and Iowa fans. Even just walking around the city, it had that Final Four fan feel. Every fan was walking around wearing their gear. And I tell you what was really interesting at shootarounds in the morning, both teams were really loose. I think because both have been there before, both played for the national championship a season ago, but you did not sense any kind of tightness as they were getting ready for the game. It was just sort of a laser focus, and the players were looking forward to this big moment. All of them talked to us about the fact that this could reach 10 million viewers. They knew it was a really hyped game. They knew there were going to be a lot of eyeballs on it, and they were all ready to live up to that moment.
So, Jay, you and I were talking before the show this morning, and we were going over some of the X's and O's, and there was one decision that LSU made defensively last night that I know you are still puzzled by and may well have gone a long way towards deciding the game.
Yeah, 100%. And Rebecca touched on it as she was calling the game. But I'm telling you, the decision, and I haven't been a coach. I've never coached a basketball game in my life. But the decision to have Haley Van Lith be the primary defender on Caitlin Clark at times felt criminal to me. I mean, if you watch Caitlin, this is last year Poe on Caitlin Clark. But at this point, Caitlin was already in her bag. Look at this, the retreat dribble, the elevation over a high hand from Angel Reese. Caitlin Clark got going so early, and there was no stopping her. Here she makes a play, anticipating on the defense. Look at all the eyes on Caitlin Clark. Three players turn their head. They don't even see Sydney Falter streaking down the floor. And who finds them? Caitlin Clark. All eyes are on Caitlin. Caitlin's eyes are on her teammates. She is scanning the floor. And this is the matchup that I was talking about. This is just a tough coverage. Haley Van Lith is 5'7". Caitlin Clark is 6 foot. Haley's like, I don't know what you want me to do. At this point, it didn't feel fair to Haley to leave her on an island like that. Like, not only was Haley on Caitlin, but then post players, they weren't coming up. So you had a mismatch, and then you had a post and drop coverage. It just didn't feel like a fair situation to at least make life a little bit more difficult for Caitlin. And just to spin it into a positive, Caitlin took advantage every single time, but that's what the greats do.
What did you see last night, Rebecca, again, sitting there courtside? How would you describe, as one who played with and has seen all of the best players in the history of the sport, how would you describe what you saw from Caitlin Clark last night?
Yeah, it was one of the epic performances we've grown accustomed from her. I mean, this is a young woman all season long. She even talked about she's had the weight of the world on her shoulders. The thing is, she doesn't mind the weight of the world on her shoulders. I mean, she's been going for records all season long. She's had eyeballs on her all season long, and she's continued to live up to the moment. And what I was so impressed with Caitlin yesterday was the balance of how she played. She started the game early, attacking the rim, getting inside, not just settling for threes, which she felt she did a little too much in the national championship game. But then she sprinkled in the threes in the first half and then a barrage of them in the second. She was able to find her open teammates as well. But no surprise, this is what Caitlin Clark has been doing all season long. It's what we saw from her a year ago as well. The bigger the moment, the bigger she plays. And there hasn't been a bigger moment, at least in terms of eyeballs in a non-Final Four game, than what we saw last night.
Tim Legler, as you watched it last night, what were you thinking?
You can't overstate how great her performance was. When you think about the level of scrutiny, the level of attention that Caitlin Clark was going to get going into this game on this stage, to be that patient and make every right read that she had to make, whether it was a shooter or a playmaker, you can't overstate it. It's so difficult to slow yourself down mentally in those moments when you want it so bad and you're getting that much attention to play with that kind of poise. I thought, you know, a lot of her shots last night, I just found her getting to her balance. Sometimes when you watch Caitlin Clark and she gets frenetic with some of these deep jumpers, her body drifts so far in one direction or the other, it just pulls the ball a little bit. She was getting her feet under her last night. And again, it speaks to a player honing in to such an extent and understanding the mechanics were going to be critical in this game to pull this off. Can't say enough about it. Look, Greeny, when you prepare to play any player and you're trying to, you know, come up with a game plan, you're basically preparing for where the ball is going to be. And now everything falls in place according to that. When you go through walkthrough, go through film, that's what it's all predicated on. When the ball's here, we're going to do this. The problem is when you have a player with this level of escapability with her handle and that level of range, you can't account for where the ball is going to be to execute the kind of game plan that you even want. That's what that skill level does. And then you also need at least one player to really step up and they had multiple, but Kate Martin, you cannot say enough about how well Kate Martin played to give her just enough of a pressure release to allow Caitlin Clark to do her thing.
You know, Andrea, when you were with me on Friday before the Sweet 16 games, you were definitely skeptical about Iowa's chances of making it to the Final Four. You thought Colorado was a toss-up. You thought they would really struggle on this night. Why are they going? What did they do that you weren't certain they'd be able to?
They're going, Greeny, because of Caitlin Clark's teammates. Like, they are in the Final Four because what have we seen from Caitlin? We've seen these type of masterclass clinic performances. But listen, coming into the tournament, during the regular season, let's just talk about the two players that stepped up yesterday, Sydney Affalter and Kate Martin. Kate Martin in the regular season averaged 11.5 points against top 25 opponents. Sydney Affalter averaged 4 points against top 25 opponents. What did they put up against the reigning national champions? Kate Martin had 21, Sydney Affalter had 16. They both played above and beyond. They both played with immense confidence. And that's what I've been looking for from this Iowa team, because Caitlin can eat. But just think about it numerically. If those two players just get what they averaged against top 25 opponents, Iowa doesn't win. So those two players stepping up, making plays, and at one point, you know, Tim was just talking about how it's hard to resist putting pressure on that, and it's hard to resist slowing yourself down. You got to figure that out. Kate Martin and Sydney Affalter, they didn't take advantage as far as creating opportunities for themselves. They let it come to them. They stay within the game plan. They stay within the flow, and they just played lights out. It was remarkable to watch those two. But even Gabby Marshall played great defense. Hannah Stolke's running the floor. You got it from everybody.
Rebecca, and we'll have all morning.
Jerry, they didn't just let it come to them.
Yeah.
They didn't just let it come to them. They let Caitlin Clark hand deliver it to them. That's what's been so remarkable. If you're on the floor with Caitlin Clark, you're going to get layups. You're going to get open threes. This is an Iowa team that led the nation in three-pointers per game, led the nation in points per game. All of it is fueled by the engine that is Caitlin Clark. She simply makes things so much easier for all of her teammates. And anytime you have a team that can consistently make threes, you can pull what might be have been considered an upset, which it felt like going into the game last night that Iowa was a little bit of the underdog, even though they were the one seed.
Yeah, they were the one seed. Go ahead, Andrea. They were a 1.5-point favorite. Very quick, go.
Well, I was going to say, Greeny, what did we say to watch? Caitlin Clark's shot chart before the game yesterday. What did we say to watch? The shot chart and her assists. She had 12 assists and she had balanced scoring. I'm telling you, that was the key.
All right, everybody stay where you are. We have much more on this, including we will ask Rebecca directly, does Caitlin Clark need to win the championship to be the greatest female college basketball player that ever lived? We will get to the bottom of that and a whole lot more as we cover what was an incredible night last night. We've also got Swagoo back with us this morning. We got football conversation to have. Aaron Rodgers' newest teammate putting the NFL on notice. Could the Jets soar all the way to the Super Bowl? We're talking about it. And then Joel closing in on a comeback. Maybe tonight. I will paint a delicious scenario, Legler, of what I think is about to happen. That'll be the most compelling first-round series maybe ever. That's next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Delicious, meet nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Get Up is brought to you by FX's American Horror Story, Delicate, returns with part two Wednesday, April 3rd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
My, and drains it. My goodness, Clark. She's possessed.
Clark.
Again. She's simply ridiculous. Dad will do it. This time, it's Iowa. The Hawkeyes are headed back to the Final Four.
To get back here is really hard. This region was loaded with so much talent, and, you know, the job's not finished.
What a night. We've been all over it all morning long. Caitlin Clark setting tournament records left and right. She broke the all-time record for assists and threes last night, tied the record for threes in a game, and she can potentially set the tournament scoring record in the Final Four. Much more with Rebecca and Andrea and Legs as we roll on in just a few minutes. In the meantime, we are delighted to welcome back Marcus Spears, the big fella, the swagoo, who's been busy falling off of boats on his vacation. Don't think we didn't see it, but we're going to do a little swagoo. We have a lot to catch up on. We haven't seen Marcus in like a month.
Yes,
so we're
going to
do the AFC stuff here, and then we'll do the NFC a little later. Let's start the big stories that we've missed. Swagoo, Justin Fields, will he be the Steelers' starting quarterback week one of the season?
Offseason, absolutely, G. Listen, I think you bring Justin Fields in if you're Pittsburgh. I love the situation he's in with Mike Tomlin and Arthur Smith. They got to give him a shot because you could be potentially talking about your franchise quarterback as opposed to this revolving door that they've had at quarterback since Ben Roethlisberger retired.
I love it, and I completely agree. We'll see if it goes that way. How about your old team, the Ravens, who you played for? If I were to say, what does Derrick Henry make them? Derrick Henry makes the Ravens what?
Derrick Henry makes Todd Monken look to the sideline and say, you know what? I might need to hand the ball off more than seven times in the AFC Championship game. Mm-hmm. Because that dude is going to be bigger than most of your offensive linemen. And hopefully his stature reminds you that you can be dominant in the run game and they can continue to have a successful ground game with what they've been able to do in the passing game under Todd Monken tutelage. But hopefully he's just a reminder that we actually can hand the football off.
And then finally, and it takes me great joy to ask you this question. Did the New York Jets have the best offseason in the NFL?
Yes, they did, G. Yes, they did. And Joe Douglas has been absolutely phenomenal at getting free agents, i.e. us talking about Aaron Rodgers for 949,000 days leading up to the time he signed with the Jets. But you look at the move that they've made with the guys bringing them in. And obviously the one thing is health, but I love the Hassan Reddick ad. I like the Mike Williams ad to go opposite of Garrett Wilson. They had a phenomenal offseason with a lot of key pieces and what they need to do. Health is going to be the most important thing because if they're healthy, they're contenders.
Well, here are the pieces that you're talking about. A lot of veterans, most notably offensive line help, wide receiver help, the backup quarterback, and then the addition on defense, Hassan Reddick, who yesterday said this.
I'm happy to be around a group of guys like this, a talented roster such as this one. It's going to be fun, man. I don't think anybody's ready for what's about to happen. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be entertaining. It should have already been that way for you guys when you look at the defense. But I know what I bring. I know the juice that I'm going to bring and the energy.
No, I'm ready for the juice. I'm ready for the energy. Squeeze me. All the juice you can possibly get. I'm ready. Tim Hasselbeck, if we get Aaron Rodgers and we can keep him upright, what are the New York Jets? What are they capable of doing this season?
Look, they're a legitimate contender. Marcus is right. They've had a great offseason. Greeny, and I would just say, like, there is somebody ready. You're ready, okay? Hassan Reddick said no one's ready. I think you are ready. You were ready last summer, too. Okay, I just would say, when I look at the Jets, I think it's it's fair to love everything they've done this offseason in terms of the additions, and we just went over that. I think the other aspect of it is this. When you look at Aaron Rodgers and his return, that's a really big deal. I don't know that we can overstate that part of it because of the impact that Aaron Rodgers, I think, ends up having on this football team. The quarterback play for years has been the thing that's handcuffed the Jets. If Aaron Rodgers is healthy, it's fair to say that, look, he'll be one of the very best quarterbacks in the league because he's proved to do it every single year that he's been healthy. And so I think that impact, along with the additions, make them a legitimate contender.
Look, here's the reality, Graziano, that so much of the conversation surrounding Aaron Rodgers has had nothing to do with football. It's almost like we've forgotten that he's a football player because he was hurt and he says so many things.
Yeah, it's his fault.
That makes it, no, I'm not suggesting right. It isn't. Yeah. What I'm saying is he talks about so much other stuff that people react to so strongly that sometimes you have to remind yourself, oh, yeah, regardless of any of that, regardless of what you think of any of that, he's freaking great.
Yeah.
And he's so much better than what we had a year ago.
Well, obviously.
What do we have here working?
You have an exciting high wire act, right? That has potential to be fantastic. I think I love what they've done this offseason because it's uniquely great for them. There are other teams in the league where if they made the exact same moves, you would have gone, well, that's a little risky. But with the Jets, why not? I mean, you're already basing the whole thing on a 40-year-old quarterback. You don't know. Aaron Rodgers is an all-time great player. He could play great. He could also fall off at age 40. He could also struggle to get through the whole season. You don't know that, but you're not operating in those areas. You're operating in the upside, the potential of what this roster with this quarterback can be, and every move they have made this offseason reflects that. It doesn't matter if they go 10-7. You'd just as soon go 3-14
right,
if you can't make it to the Super Bowl with this team.
So, Marcus, what is it? What's the ceiling? If it goes, they're trying to catch lightning in a bottle. It's hard to do. But if somehow they manage to do it, what's the result?
The result is they are, like we've heard, legit contenders. And with Aaron back there, you got a potential to win any game that you play in because of how he plays. But when you think about this, G, we've seen this happen on the NFC side. This is nothing but a carbon copy of what the Los Angeles Rams went through. We remember F them picks and making sure that they were building a team for right now. And we talked about how would this be 3 years afterwards. They going to leverage everything. Well, this is where the New York Jets are. They've been in purgatory. And this is a team that spent an offseason telling everyone that we're fed up with not being relevant in the AFC and not being relevant in the conversation to win a Super Bowl with all of the things that have transpired in the AFC. The problem is Patrick Mahomes is still over there. Lamar Jackson is still over there. It's a lot tougher road for the Jets than it was for the Los Angeles Rams when they built that team. But again, the most important thing, and like we talked about last offseason, it was the offensive line. How would they play? And this season going in, yes, they have really good players in those positions. Will they stay healthy throughout the rest of the season? Because we know what the issue was 3 minutes into the season this year.
The Rams were further along than the Jets are now. They had been in a Super Bowl a couple years earlier. They had been in the playoffs pretty regularly. So there's still a lot of people in the Jets building that have a lot to prove.
Yeah.
The coaching staff. I mean, as great as the defense has been, the team hasn't done much winning. Bringing in a guy that was in the Super Bowl 2 years ago with the Eagles is a good move.
I'll pretend I didn't hear any of that. As we continue,
the last part was good.
Back to Caitlin Clark's magical night. How special does she need to be for her team to win a national championship? And if she does, what will it mean? Plus, the comeback. Does Joel's return set up the worst nightmare scenario for one NBA coach? Spoiler alert, the answer is yes, and I'll tell you which one next. Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
We are back on Get Up, bottom of the hour. If you're just joining us, it was an epic night of college basketball on ESPN. All the hype in the world, and they lived up to it. It felt like a heavyweight title bout between Caitlin Clark and Iowa, Angel Reese and LSU. In the end, it was Clark, the all-time leading scorer in NCAA history, hitting 9 3-pointers, finishing with 41 points, 12 assists, and Iowa advances with a 94-87 win to move on to the Final Four. Caitlin Clark scoring or assisting on 67 of Iowa's 94 points. That 71% is the third most by a player in an NCAA tournament game in the last 25 years, and we've had coverage all morning long. We've got Andrea Carter with us, who continues with us today. We had Rebecca Lobo earlier, Tim Legler chiming in, and I want to bring Marcus Spears on this as well. Marcus, one of the great high school basketball players in Louisiana history and obviously an LSU alum. So I know that you're sad this morning, but still proud. But Drea, let me just start with you for those who are not with us at the beginning of the hour. I mean, Caitlin Clark has become a star unlike practically anyone I can think of in her sport. And in what might have been the biggest stage she's ever had, she had one of the best games of all time. How do you describe the show she put on last night?
Honestly, Greeny, at this point, the best way to describe it, because we've described it as great, we've described her as a legend or a scorer, like, it was inspiring. Like, it truly was. As I was sitting there reflecting on the game, to watch Caitlin Clark not only meet this moment, probably the biggest moment in her career at this point, meet the moment with such poise and such control and almost make it look effortless. Like, she was in complete control the entire time. There was no point where I felt like, oh, LSU is dictating Caitlin Clark. LSU is making Caitlin Clark do this. Caitlin Clark was in control the entire game. She dictated everything from her teammates' success to LSU's lack of success. I mean, it was just remarkable. And to me, it's inspiring. Like, not many people are able to meet a moment that big the way that she did.
And Marcus, again, not only were you a terrific player, but your wife was a basketball player. Let's start with Caitlin before we get to your alma mater. What did you see from Caitlin Clark last night?
Poise, man. Poise. Drea and Tanae talked about it last night. I watched you all with Elle. Y'all did a phenomenal job. But when you think about all throughout the whole game, whether it was runs, and anybody that's played basketball know that the game is a game of runs. But she stayed poised through it all. When LSU made a run, it was poised. It was controlling tempo. It was making sure that I'm going to get 41 points, but I'm going to keep everybody else involved. To me, that's her greatness. Her greatness is the 12 assists on the night, along with scoring 41 points, along with making her teammates feel, look, you guys' responsibility to us winning this game is as important to ours. And we can get enamored with the three-point shooting, but we've seen it all season long. The great ones are just consistent at what they do great longer than everybody else. So that's what she does as far as the basketball court. But when you look at the totality of the game and how she affected and influenced every play that was made last night, it was phenomenal to watch. So more than us just getting so enamored with the three-point shooting, she's a basketball player. Andrea knows this. When you're walking throughout courts in America or when you're playing basketball in any gym, the best way to describe and the word that hoopers love to hear when they walk in the gym to know that they are solidified and stamped, the bottom line is Caitlin Clark is a hooper. It don't matter if it's Sunday at the park. It don't matter if she in an arena with 20,000 people watching. She is a hooper, and she's not affected by what's going on around her, which is a trait that all the great ones have.
And so is Angel Reese. And let's have a moment on that side of this. So LSU, the defending national champs. I said it earlier. On the first half, Angel Reese was the best player on the floor, inclusive of everyone, including Caitlin Clark. And then the ankle. And look, she wouldn't use it as an excuse afterwards. And I don't know how much it impacted it, whatever it was. Caitlin clearly took the game over in the second half. But I want everyone to hear, or you guys in particular, to hear what Angel Reese said after the game, because there were some interesting comments. She's become an extraordinarily well-known person in the sport and beyond the sport. And here were her thoughts after the game last night.
I've been through so much. I've seen so much. I've been attacked so many times. Death threats. I've been sexualized. I've been threatened. I've been so many things, and I've stood strong every single time. And I just try to stand strong for my teammates because I don't want them to see me down and, like, not be there for them. So I just want to always just know, like, I'm still a human. Like, all this has happened since I won the national championship, and I said the other day I haven't had peace since then. And it sucks, but I still wouldn't change. I wouldn't change anything, and I would still sit here and say, like, I'm unapologetically me. I'm going to always leave that mark and be who I am and stand on that.
Drea, what's your reaction to what she said?
You know, it's sad to me, Greeny, to have a player of that level of greatness have to deal with so much. And I was talking to SVP after the game late last night, and we have to reach a point where, and it should start with the college kids if it's going to start anywhere, where we are judging them off of their performance on the court. I know Angel Reese. I've spent time with her. She is happy to accept criticism of her game. She is happy to talk basketball. She is happy to be held to a higher standard on the court. But when the insults and the phrases that are being said to her come at a personal level, that weighs on you. We have to get to a point where we are judging performances and not judging them as people. I've seen so many things about who Angel Reese is as a person from people who have never met her. And that's the degree that becomes so heavy. That's what she's talking about. She's not talking about her game. She's talking about off the court coming for who she is as a woman. And that's what has to change.
Marcus, again, your LSU connection and everything else, pardon me, what was your reaction?
You know, the unfortunate part, and Drea hit the nail on the head, but we like the issue with sports in general right now, especially with the communication and social media, and you're able to follow athletes. And to Angel's point, we dehumanize them. We've objectified, and I'm not saying we all speak of Angel Reese in a highlight, and if you've been around it, to Drea's point, we all know who she is and we know what she stands for and we know that she's a great person. But people objectify her because it's easy to do. Because a lot of what people do and a lot of the hate and vitriol that comes her way is because they can't do it. It's because they're not in that position because of the work that they put in. And I think the more and more she grows, she'll understand that. And the other thing that reminded me when she was talking about that press conference last night, because I made a couple of statements on Twitter last night, and you should see what people said about her. Like, it was unbelievable to me. All I said was it was a horrible call on the charge call that fouled her out in the game. And then it became about Angel Reese, the person. And I'm looking at it, and I literally put on there, this is why I've been off this app for a month. Like, sometimes it's good to just unplug because you realize that people objectify these kids and they look at them as a thing and not as a human. And I think when you hear her talk about that in the press conference, now it'll come with maturity. She'll understand how to handle it better. She'll understand how to unplug, but continue to be you, Angel. It's a lot of people that's rooting for you. It's more people that love you than the people that's objectifying you and hating on you. So keep doing your thing, Mom.
All right, so I want to leave that there, but we'll talk more about it as we go. That was the early game last night. Then we went to Connecticut and USC. Drea, let's go through that one because you had the two superstars here as well. You have Paige Beckers. You have Juju Watkins for a spot in the Final Four, and Paige Beckers was terrific.
You know, that play was electrifying to me, Greeny. It looks like a steal and a layup, but it was after a timeout, and Paige made the right read to extend the lead.
Here's Juju Watkins in transition. It was Connecticut's lead most of the night. That one brought USC within three, less than a minute later. USC coming all the way back to tie it at 59.
Yeah, this was incredible. You have to give USC credit for their fight. Give Juju and Paige both credit for knowing when to take over and knowing when to trust your teammates. That shot right there was a takeover moment to give them a six-point lead, 3.5 minutes left. Come on.
And then another one from Paige Beckers, a floater, a 10-0 run. She had 28 points and 10 rebounds. And UConn wins it 80-73. They advance to their 23rd Final Four. What a night of basketball last night. So here's the Final Four, four schools named after states, unbeaten South Carolina trying to finish the job, Caitlin Clark pushing for legend status, an NC State team that hasn't been there in a long time, and a UConn team that it feels like is literally always there, all that coming up next weekend. Meanwhile, Tim Legler, the big story in the NBA yesterday that broke as we were finishing our show, is the imminent return of Joel Embiid, who's been out since January 30th with the meniscus. The Sixers are 40-35 in the Eastern Conference. There are seven games remaining. And if you look at the standings and you look where everything sits, it is almost a certainty. Nothing is for sure, but it is almost a certainty that they will be in the play-in, yeah, and they will play Miami in the 7-8 game. I just want to set up a scenario. We talked about this on the radio yesterday. Embiid and the Sixers win that game. They're the 7th seed. And they go up in the first round against Doc Rivers, their former coach, and a Milwaukee team that has basically been 500 since he got there. That is as epic a first-round series as you could ask for.
I love the scenario that you're painting, and I do think there's some realism to that. But first of all, it looks like you're right. Philadelphia's going to be in that 7-8 game one way or another. They're going to have to take care of Miami most likely. If they win that game, and look, you're injecting a guy right now into this whole equation, that's an unstoppable force. There's no answer for Joel Embiid. There's no preparation for him. He probably will be on some sort of a minutes restriction, but this guy can pack it in. Whatever minutes he gets, he's going to be able to dominate the game to that extent. And then if they do that and take on the Bucks, look, the Bucks have not found their footing, in my opinion, to look at them and say, you know, this team is on a different level than what Philly will look like when they get Joel Embiid back. Here's some numbers to keep in mind. When Joel Embiid has played this year, in effect, Philadelphia's the second best team in the league.
Yes.
Right, his net rating when he plays is second only to Boston as a team. That's the impact that he has. Here's the other thing, Green, you remember this. You know, Steph Curry, a couple years ago when they won the title, missed some time with an injury in the spring, came back, had juice in his legs that he would not have had if he didn't get that time off. It's going to be the same for Joel Embiid. Now, and I don't think necessarily you're going to worry about rust or anything like that. I mean, with the shots he gets in the area of the floor that he dominates, his shooting percentages are going to be there. There's no doubt in my mind. Defensively, he will be a presence. So this extra adrenaline that he might have and the fresh legs could be a huge boost for Philadelphia if they have to play the Bucks.
Same with LeBron last year. LeBron got hurt in February, missed a bunch of time, was fresher in the playoffs, and the Lakers go all the way to the Western Conference Final. With a healthy Joel Embiid, can the Sixers beat Milwaukee? Could they actually knock out the 2 seed and make a run maybe all the way to Boston in the conference final?
They absolutely could. And normally, if a player's been out this long, Greeny, and comes back at this time of the year, and from where they're going to be situated, coming out of the play-in, I wouldn't say that that's a likelihood. But when I look at the Eastern Conference outside of Boston, if they can avoid Boston, I think the Philadelphia 76ers absolutely could make a run to the conference finals. Look at who would be in their way at that point. I just think Philadelphia, putting him into the equation, and what else they have, and what Maxey's done. They added Buddy Hield, who really didn't get a chance to play with Embiid. They have Buddy Hield on that roster now. Kelly Oubre's been great. I think Philadelphia, absolutely, their ceiling would be conference finals.
I'll repeat what he said. When Embiid has played, they've had the second best record in the NBA this year, second only to Boston. I think they become very dangerous. Stay close by, legs. Wednesday doubleheader, Celtics Thunder, 7:30 Eastern. Then Cavs and Suns. Coverage starts with Countdown, 7 Eastern here on ESPN. Coming up, back to Swagoo and football conversation. Are the Cowboys about to take a giant step back? Will this be Dak's last dance? Swagoo catching up on everything they did and didn't do. Next, get up on ESPN.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking in that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 Central on ABC.
All right, we're back on Get Up. And oh, by the way, in the middle of absolutely everything else last night, this happened.
Blanco, one pitch away. Ground ball. Dubon throws to first. Go-hitter! Renato Blanco in his eighth career start took on April Fool's Day.
Feels like it happens every year. A pitcher on the Astros that most people have never heard of throws a no-hitter. Blanco's eighth career start, he had never thrown 100 pitches. He had never gone into the seventh inning. It's the Astros' 17th no-hitter in franchise history. Their fourth since June of 2022, Graziano. The rest of baseball has three in that span. April 1st, by the way, the earliest calendar date of a no-hitter in baseball history. So amidst everything else, we had that last night. And this morning, again, we celebrate the return of Swaggoo. So we're catching up with him on all the things he has missed since he's been off for a few weeks. We did some of the AFC storylines earlier. We'll get back to the college basketball shortly. Let's get to the NFC here, Swaggoo. Let's start with the number one pick. Who do you believe is the right pick for the Bears at the top?
It's Caleb Williams, and the Bears believe it's Caleb Williams based on the moves that they've made, the consistency, the ability to improv, and we know that this position has become a lot about playmaking when it gets in critical situations and critical games, and all they did was go to L.A. to Pro Day to confirm what they already believe about Caleb Williams. I think he's the first pick for the Chicago Bears. Y'all okay. Debate who the best one is. Caleb Williams going to be taken first by the Bears.
I think that's right. Whether he's the best one or not, I agree with you. The next question would be this. The Eagles have done a bunch of tinkering. They were in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Are they right now the biggest threat to San Francisco and the NFC?
No, G. Surprisingly, I'm going with the Detroit Lions. I remember the first half of that game on the road that the Detroit Lions put together. And we all walked away from that game saying, yeah, credit the 49ers, credit Brock Purdy. But the Detroit Lions did everything they could to give the NFC championship game away in that second half. I'm going to go with the Lions. Consistency, returning their guys, and playing at a very high level.
Okay, and then one more. Let's talk about your old team, the Cowboys. I kept saying, well, once they do something, as soon as the Cowboys do something, we'll call Swaggoo and we'll get him on to react to it. Well, we never had to call you, Swaggoo, because the Cowboys haven't done anything since last we spoke. What is your reaction? Is this the last dance with Dak? What do we say about the Cowboys?
We say nothing because nothing has happened, G. And I've been sitting here twiddling my thumbs thinking about, you know what? It's been a lot of off seasons where we've talked about moves that's been made for the Dallas Cowboys, whether that be keeping their own guys or bringing guys in. All they've been doing this year is sending people away and doing absolutely nothing. I'm not going to shade Eric Kendricks' move. They needed a linebacker. Great, they got a linebacker, but they got nobody else, okay? And the problem is that, you know, I can go off on a tangent and go off on a rant about this, but we heard all in. Everybody heard it. The whole world heard it because the whole world listens to what the Dallas Cowboys are doing, and ain't nothing been all in about this offseason outside of me riding past the store and going work out at Cowboy Fit up there because I get a discount because I'm a former Cowboy. And I'm around the facility, and I'm going to tell you what's happening around the facility, G. Nothing. Nothing's happening up there. It ain't nothing but a bunch of people enjoying the star up there in Frisco. We eating at the restaurants. I'm going to visit my store, Jay Hilburn, to get my suits made so I can get ready for next season. I'm working out at Cowboy Fit. They got a 50-yard line field. All the kids are playing. It's a wonderful facility. The Ford Center has been hosting high school athletes. They've been having camps. My son is training up there at the Sports Academy right next door to the star. And everybody around the facility of the Dallas Cowboys are doing something. But guess who ain't doing nothing? The Dallas Cowboys. I ain't seen no scouts. I ain't seen no GMs. I ain't seen no coaches. I haven't seen anything happen. I ain't seen a Brinks truck back up there for no free agent to sign. I ain't even seen Derrick Henry up there because Derrick Henry now is Baltimore. So nothing's going on. Guys, it's an offseason. I don't know what we're going to do. There are no stories coming out outside of what they're going to do with Dak, and they probably going to extend Dak. I don't want to get into this blow it all up. Quarterbacks ain't growing no trees. He's still a real good one.
So, right, Tim, how about it. Your perspective
that's my tangent,
on all
that? That's my rant.
We have it's a good rant. Well, I mean, go, Tim. Yeah.
I don't. Well, my perspective is I don't get a discount because that's the one NFC team I was never on that roster. So I would just say this: like, look, I think that when I look at the situation at Dallas, look. Dak won this a while ago. When Dak was making $800,000 a year and the Cowboys, you know, were hesitant to pay him, I think they were trying to use the fact that he hadn't made much money, you know, against him to sign an undermarket deal. He played chicken with Jerry Jones and he won. And because of that, He can continue to play well, get to the end of contracts, and so now they're in a bad spot because of the leverage that Dak has. And rightfully so from Dak's perspective. And so because of that, there's just certain things they can't do. Can't get involved in the Derrick Henry game or the A.J. Dillon game. Can't do that. Can't improve in some areas that Marcus is talking about in terms of in free agency. And so with that, look, this is the situation they're in. In some ways, guys, it reminds me a little bit like the Saints. When the Saints continued to pay Drew Brees and kind of extend things out as he got older. Now, the good thing for New Orleans was Brees continued to play at a really high level. In order for them to have any type of success as they extend this with Dak Prescott, because I think ultimately that's what they do, he needs to continue to play at a really high level or even play at a better level for them to have any success.
Dan. Yeah, he played at a really high level all last year until the playoff game, right? So that's what's missing is the playoff success. And that's something I don't think you can necessarily engineer in March with your moves. They need to be better in the run game and better at stopping the run, and they haven't really made a ton of moves to help in those areas, but the offseason is not over yet. In terms of Dak Prescott, I do believe ultimately they extend him. I'm just not sure that's going to get done this offseason. We've talked about this on the show for the last couple weeks. Financially, against the salary cap, it actually makes more sense to do it next offseason. Obviously, that carries risk. Will he want to go somewhere else? Will he have a bad year? Will things fall apart? But right now, I think the Cowboys feel like Dak's going to be there, and they're going to get CeeDee Lamb signed, and they're going to take care of the business they want to take care of, which does not involve going out and signing other people's free agents.
All right, so you are caught up on everything with Marcus except for his little fishing mishap. We will get to that as we go. In the meantime, the 22nd annual McDonald's High School All-American Girls Game is tonight on ESPN2. That's 6:30 Eastern. Then at 9 on ESPN, we will have the boys game featuring the top prospect, Connor Flagg, who is on his way to Duke. So good basketball action coming your way. But the basketball last night was unbelievable. Oh, what a night for Caitlin Clark. What happens if she wins the championship next weekend? We put the crew back together. We're talking about an epic evening. Don't miss it. Next.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia, Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.